the 20th study of the Book of Revelation, held at the Enfield Ecclesial Hall on the 23rd of March 1976. Brother John Knowles, speaking to the subject, A Great Multitude Out of Every Nation, and the reading, Leviticus chapter 23.
It was a spirit word, brothers and sisters, that said, Blessed are we that read now and understand accurately the words of this book. And therefore, we give you a cordial welcome, brothers and sisters, this evening as we commence another study on the book of the Revelation. We will commence our meeting with the singing of hymn 142, followed by prayer. Hymn 142. For this evening, brethren and sisters, which is A Great Multitude Out of Every Nation, we've been asked to read from the book of Leviticus, chapter 23, and I'll ask our brother Richard Cheek if he would come forward, please, and read that chapter to us.
Together, Leviticus, chapter 23. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, Concerning the feasts of the Lord, which ye shall proclaim to be holy convocations, Even these are my feasts. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of rest and holy convocation. Ye shall do no work therein. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. These are the feasts of the Lord, even holy convocations, which ye shall proclaim in their seasons. In the 14th day of the first month, at even, is the Lord's Passover. And on the 15th day of the same month is the feast of unleavened bread unto the Lord. 7 days ye must eat unleavened bread. In the first day ye shall have an holy convocation, ye shall do no servile work therein. But ye shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord 7 days. In the seventh day is an holy convocation, ye shall do no servile work therein. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, When ye be come into the land which I give unto you, and shall reap the harvest thereof, Then ye shall bring a sheaf of the firstfruits of your harvest into the priest, and he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted for you. On the morrow after the Sabbath the priest shall wave it. And ye shall offer that day, when ye wave the sheaf, an he lamb without blemish of the first year for a burnt offering unto the Lord. And the meat offering thereof shall be 2 tenth deals of fine flour mingled with oil, an offering made by fire unto the Lord for a sweet savour. And the drink offering thereof shall be of wine, the fourth part of an hin. And ye shall eat neither bread nor parched corn, nor green ears, until the selfsame day that ye have brought an offering unto your God.
It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations in all your dwellings. And ye shall count unto you from the morrow after the Sabbath, from the day that ye brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be complete. Even unto the morrow after the seventh Sabbath shall ye number 50 days, and ye shall offer a new meat offering unto the Lord. Ye shall bring out of your habitations 2 wave loaves of 2/10 deals. They shall be of fine flour, they shall be baken with leaven, they are the first fruits unto the Lord. And ye shall offer with the bread 7 lambs without blemish of the first year, and 1 young bullock, and 2 rams. They shall be for a burnt offering unto the Lord with their meat offering and their drink offerings, even an offering made by fire of sweet savour unto the Lord. Then ye shall sacrifice 1 kid of the goats for a sin offering, and 2 lambs of the first year for a sacrifice of peace offerings. And the priest shall wave them with the bread of the first fruits for a wave offering before the Lord. With the 2 lambs, they shall be holy to the Lord for the priest. And ye shall proclaim on the selfsame day, that it may be an holy convocation unto you. Ye shall do no servile work therein. It shall be a statute forever in all your dwellings throughout your generations. And when ye reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not make clean riddance of the corners of thy field when thou reapest, neither shalt thou gather any gleanings of thy harvest. Thou shalt leave them unto the poor and to the stranger. I am the Lord your God. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, In the 7th month, in the 1st day of the month, shall ye have a Sabbath, a memorial of blowing of trumpets, and holy convocation. Ye shall do no servile work therein, but ye shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Also on the 10th day of the 7th month there shall be a day of atonement. It shall be an holy convocation unto you, and ye shall afflict your souls, and offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. And ye shall do no work in that day, for it is a day of atonement, to make an atonement for you before the Lord your God. For whatsoever soul it be that shall not be afflicted in that same day, he shall be cut off from among his people. And whatsoever soul it be that doeth any work in that same day, the same soul will I destroy from among his people. Ye shall do no manner of work, it shall be a statute forever throughout your generations in all your dwellings. It shall be unto you a Sabbath of rest, and ye shall afflict your souls. In the ninth day of the month, at even, from even unto even, shall ye celebrate your Sabbath. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, The 15th day of the 7th month shall be the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days unto the Lord. On the first day shall be an holy convocation, ye shall do no servile work therein. 7 days ye shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. On the 7th day shall be an holy convocation unto you, and ye shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. It is a solemn assembly, and ye shall do no servile work therein. These are the feasts of the Lord which ye shall proclaim to be holy convocations, to offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord, a burnt offering and a meat offering, a sacrifice and drink offerings, everything upon his day. Beside the Sabbaths of the Lord, and beside your gifts, and beside all your vows, and beside all your free will offerings, which ye give unto the Lord. Also in the 15th day of the 7th month, when ye have gathered in the fruit of the land, ye shall keep a feast unto the Lord 7 days. On the 1st day shall be a Sabbath, and on the 8th day shall be a Sabbath. And ye shall take you on the 1st day the boughs of goodly trees, branches of palm trees, and the boughs of thick trees, and willows of the brook, and ye shall rejoice before the Lord your God 7 days. And ye shall keep it a feast unto the Lord 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. Ye shall celebrate it in the 7th month. Ye shall dwell in booths 7 days. All that are Israelites born shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel to dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. And Moses declared unto the children of Israel the feast of the Lord.
Before calling upon our brother John, brothers and sisters, I've been asked to make one announcement. This book was found after the last class. It has a small piece of paper with hieroglyphics written on it. Does anybody lay claim? Also on the back page, the great multitude out of every nation, our brother John.
Dear brethren and sisters, dear young people, although our reading this evening was taken from Leviticus chapter 23, we are in fact studying Revelation chapter 7, verses 9 to 17. Those who were here at the last class will remember that I set before you what I believe to be the basis of the three main visions in this particular section of the book of Revelation. That is, the vision of the redeemed in chapter 5 and chapter 6, or rather I should say chapters 4 and 5, who were saved through the blood of the Lamb, this being a vision based upon the Feast of Passover. Then in chapter 7, verses 1 to 8, we have the vision of the 144,000 who are styled in Revelation chapter 14 the first fruits. Therefore I suggested this was based upon the Feast of First Fruits. Then when we come to the new vision this evening, commencing in verse 9 of Revelation chapter 7, we have a multitude which no man could number, who are clothed with white robes and palms in their hands. This, Brother Thomas says, is a vision of the Feast of Tabernacles. Well, that was what I endeavoured to set out last week, leaving the tabernacles to be looked at in more detail this week. But I think it mightn't hurt if we spend a little bit of time again looking at the overall basis of these three visions. I think there may have been some that found it a little bit fast last time, and maybe I presume too much background knowledge in one or two areas. I think possibly one of the areas where we may need just a little bit of revision is the matter of the three basic feasts themselves. And so that is the reason why we read Revelation chapter 23 this evening, in order that we might have a general picture of what are the three major feasts in the Jewish year. Now going back then to Leviticus chapter 23, we find there that the chapter does present before us these three major feasts. In verses 4 to 8 of the chapter, he deals with the Feast of Passover. This was the first feast of the Jewish year, celebrated on the 14th day of the first month. Then he goes on to deal with the Feast of First Fruits, or of Pentecost. We'll deal with that in a little bit more detail in a moment and show the difference between the two terms. But in essence, you could say it was one celebration. And that starts at about verse 9 and goes through to around about verse 22. And then he deals with the third of the feasts, starting in verse 33 and going to the end of the chapter, which is the Feast of Tabernacles. And so there were certain lessons to be set forth before Israel in these three major feasts. It was obligatory for every man in Israel to attend these three feasts each year. And so they formed a very important part of the life of the Jewish people in the Mosaic dispensation. We're well aware of the fact that these feasts were not designed to be an end in themselves, but they were designed to teach certain spiritual lessons. Consequently, when we come to a book like the book of Revelation, the deity presumes that we already understand the principles of such things as the feasts under the law. And he expects the spiritually minded to immediately see allusions to things such as the feasts. This is just one of those assumptions that is made in the book of Revelation, because it is written for the servants of the deity, for those who understand his basic purpose. Well, bearing in mind that there are some who are young, both in years and in the truth, and some who may not be all that familiar with the law of Moses, for one reason or another, I think it's only fair, therefore, that we should spend just a little bit of time looking at that this evening. So I want to take each one of these in turn. The transparency which I'm putting up, first of all, is the one that was up last week, so you don't have to worry about copying this down. But just to show you these three main divisions again. In Revelation chapters 4, 5 and 6, we have one vision. I've shown that by reason of the fact that that's all written there in brown. Revelation chapter 4 verse 1 starts off with the phrase, after these things I saw certain things. And that goes right through to the end of chapter 6. So that is one complete vision. I'm suggesting that that vision is based upon the principle of the Passover. The terms in there are descriptive of Passover. It is a multitude who have been saved out of certain nations by the blood of the Lamb. And this is exactly what the Passover commemorated. When we come to chapter 7, we find that key phrase once again, after these things, I saw something else. And so the section there in green, which is chapter 7 verses 1 to 8, is the vision of the 144,000 sealed ones, which are described as the first fruits unto God. And there is a very definite clue there as to its alignment with the Feast of First Fruits. When we come now to this next vision, which goes actually from chapter 7 verse 9 right through to chapter 15 verse 4, that is all one vision, it is introduced by a vision of a numberless multitude with palms in their hands and wearing white robes. And that, we're suggesting, is based on the Feast of Tabernacles. So in each of these three sections, the brown section, chapters 4 to 6, the green section, chapter 7, verses 1 to 8, and this black section, chapter 7, verses 9 to 17, each one of them has a vision of the saints in glory. Each one of them has a vision of the saints in glory. But each of these visions presents a different facet of the saints in glory. And this is where these three feasts come into it. Because it is the Passover theme, the first fruits theme, and the tabernacles theme which is the basis of these particular visions. It is not speaking of a different group of people. The 144,000 and the numberless multitude are the same group, but revealed in different facets of God manifestation. That once again brings us back to the basic theme which we've been pursuing in our study. It's understandable, of course, that people who don't understand the theme of God manifestation would come to a book like Revelation and they would say, well, surely the 144,000 of the first 8 verses can't be the same as the numberless multitude of verses 9 to 17. Well, they can be, providing we understand that we're dealing with God manifestation and not just certain facts or certain chronological or other types of details. Well, that's the basis on which I intend looking at this evening, and I think this may be the area where some felt that I could have gone a little slower last time, or some other sort of comment, maybe less kind. But we're going to look first of all anyway at the theme of Passover. Now, I think of all the feasts, we should be the most familiar with the Passover. The Passover was a reminder of Israel's deliverance from Egypt through the blood of the slain lamb. I'm sure we'd all agree with that, but that's what Passover was. The angel of death passed over, and the angel which destroyed the firstborn of the Egyptians was also the angel which was instrumental in saving the children of Israel. But the medium through which they were saved was through the blood of the slain lamb. So that's the facts of the Passover in the past. Now, the vision of the glorified saints in Revelation chapter 4 and 5 is based on the Passover principle. So let's go over to Revelation chapter 4 and 5. For those who feel obliged to keep writing, you keep writing and I'll read the verses out. You need to look them up because you've probably seen them before. Now, in Revelation chapter 5, take those very well-known verses, verses 9 and 10. And they sung a new song, saying, Thou art worthy to take the book and to open the seals thereof, for thou wast slain, and hast redeemed us to God by thy blood out of every kindred and tongue and people and nation, and hast made us unto our God kings and priests, and we shall reign on the earth. Now these words are being sung to the Lamb. We're told that in verse 8, that these words are addressed to the Lamb. Because in verse 12 they go on to say, Worthy is the Lamb that was slain, to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honour and glory and blessing. So here are certain words which are being addressed to the Lamb. They are being, the redeemed are saying that they have been redeemed out of certain kindreds and tongues and people. Israel was redeemed from Egypt through the blood of the slain lamb. And having been brought out of Egypt, the multitude were redeemed, they were saved by the blood of the lamb. As a result, we are told here in Revelation 5 that they have been made kings and priests, or as some translate it, they have been made a kingdom of priests. Now this is exactly what we read in Exodus chapter 19 and verse 6. The consequent upon their deliverance from Egypt, Yahweh constituted them a kingdom of priests. Exodus chapter 19 and verse 6. Verse 5 says, "Now therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed, and keep my covenant, then you shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and an holy nation. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel." And so, having been delivered from Egypt, I've got Exodus 19 before this next statement, but chronologically speaking, the next one of course comes before it. They also sung the song of Moses. Having come through the Red Sea, they rejoiced and they sung the song of Moses. This same group in Revelation are described as singing the song of Moses and of the Lamb. And that's in a future vision in Revelation chapter 15 and verse 3. Now what we're suggesting here, only in a very brief fashion, and you may like to follow this through in greater depth, because there are some other comparisons there you can find yourselves just by reading it through, that the whole tenor of the vision of Revelation 4 and 5 is based upon a group of people who have been redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. And of course Leviticus chapter 23 verses 4 to 8 deals with the detail of the Passover. And that's all I intend to say about the Passover vision. You can follow that through to the depth that you like to go to. But to me, this answers the reason why we have several visions of this same group, with slightly differing details. Not contradictory details, of course, but revealing to us different facets of God manifestation. I'll link all these three together later on. We're just taking them piecemeal at the moment. So that's the vision of Passover. How are we going copying it down? Does anyone still want some more time to copy it down? If you do, just sort of put your hand up and I'll talk on for a while on something while you copy it. All right? Finished. Good. Well, we'll come on then to the second of the feasts. And this is the one that we looked at last time. And it's the Feast of First Fruits. Focus it on the top part first and then we'll move it up so you can get the bottom part later. Alright, well you might like to copy that down while I'm turning up the various quotes too. The first fruits are defined as the fruits which were first ripe. This of course is where the word first fruits comes from. They were the fruits which were first ripe, the plucking of which was an earnest of the coming harvest. An earnest, a foreshadowing of the coming harvest. First fruits were to be given as an offering to Yahweh from the nation of Israel. Now, if we go over to Leviticus chapter 23, we read about some of the details of the first fruits. In Leviticus chapter 23, the feast of first fruits is first described in verse 10, where we are told, well, Moses was told, "Speak unto the children of Israel and say unto them, when ye be come into the land which I give unto you, and shall reap the harvest thereof, then ye shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest unto the priest, and he shall wave the sheaf before Yahweh to be accepted for you. On the morrow after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it." And ye shall offer that day when ye weigh the sheep an he lamb without blemish of the first year for a burnt offering unto Yahweh. So we're told then that on the first day after the Sabbath, or on the morrow after the Sabbath, which was 3 days after the Passover, they brought in a sheep of the first fruits. This was probably a barley sheep because of the time factor involved. And so there was waved a sheep of the first fruits. Now this was virtually straight after Passover. It was 3 days after the Passover that this was waved. It was waved before Yahweh. Now the next part of that same celebration took place 50 days later. And because, I think it's in the Greek, I think it's Greek, isn't it, that 50 is penty? Because it happened 50 days later, they called it the Feast of Pentecost. They didn't call it Pentecost back in the Old Testament. They called it Pentecost in the New Testament because that's where the Greek comes from. But 50 days after this, then of course by this stage they now had sufficient of the harvest to be able to produce something with it. We read in verse 15, "And ye shall count unto you from the morrow after the Sabbath, from the day that ye brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be complete." That's 49 days. 7 times 7 is 49. And so 7 complete Sabbaths, even unto the morrow after the 7th Sabbath. Well, that makes 49 plus 1, which is 50. So he says, "Shall ye number 50 days, and ye shall offer a new meat offering or meal offering unto Yahweh. Ye shall bring out of your habitations 2 wave loaves of 2 tenth deals. They shall be of fine flour, they shall be baked with leaven. They are the first fruits unto Yahweh." So on the morrow after the Sabbath, after Passover, that's 3 days after Passover, there was a sheaf waved before Yahweh. 50 days after that, there were 2 loaves prepared, which are styled the bread of the first fruits. And in verse 18, they were told to offer with the bread 7 lambs without blemish of the first year, 1 young bullock, and 2 rams. They shall be for a burnt offering unto Yahweh with their meat offering and their drink offerings, even an offering made by fire of sweet savour unto Yahweh. Then ye shall sacrifice 1 kid of the goat for a sin offering, and 2 lambs of the first year for a sacrifice of peace offerings. And they were told, the priest shall wave them with the bread of the first fruits. So there were 2 stages in this particular feast. Let's go back then to the note that you're copying down. First fruits were to be given as an offering to Yahweh from the nation of Israel, a sheaf at the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and 2 loaves at the Feast of Weeks. You may like to note this, that what I have called the Feast of Pentecost was also known as the Feast of Weeks. They called it the Feast of Weeks back in the Old Testament because they had to count off 7 lots of 7s. It was sort of a complete period of weeks. In the New Testament it's called Pentecost. So I've called it there the Feast of Weeks. The term is used in the New Testament in Romans 8 verse 23, chapter 11 verse 16, and chapter 16 verse 5. We looked at all these last time. 1 Corinthians 15 verses 20 and 23, and chapter 16 verse 15. James 1 verse 18, and Revelation chapter 14 and verse 4. Now let's have a look at the significance. In the antitype, and for those who perhaps haven't come across the word antitype before, if the Feast of First Fruits was a type of something, if it was a type of something greater to come, then when the greater thing comes, that is of course styled the antitype. Now in the antitype, Christ is that waved sheep that was waved 3 days after the Passover, the day of resurrection. That's why Paul in 1 Corinthians 15 can say that Christ is the first fruits from the dead. On the day when that waved sheep was being waved, So the Lord Jesus Christ was raised from the dead. He therefore is the way of sheep on the very day. So 3 days after the Passover this took place. And the redeemed are the antitypical bread of the first fruits offered at Pentecost. And you'll remember that it was on the day of Pentecost when Peter stood up and addressed the multitude that the ecclesia was first constituted on an organised basis. The ecclesia, of course, was in essence formed when the Lord Jesus Christ died on the cross. But the fact is that the ecclesia is regarded as seeing its formation on the day of Pentecost. And so 50 days after the resurrection of the Lord, there was the day of Pentecost. And just as there were two loaves offered on such an occasion, so the two loaves represented the Jewish and Gentile components of the ecclesia. You also remember that Peter was given two keys. The first key he used on the day of Pentecost to unlock the door of faith to the household of Israel, and the second key he used when he went down to the house of Cornelius and introduced the gospel to the Gentiles. So the two keys of the kingdom, or the two loaves of the Feast of First Fruits, represent the foundation of the ecclesia being the first fruits unto Yahweh. So the Lord Jesus Christ personally was the way sheaf, and the ecclesia, styled the bread of the first fruits, were those who were in effect offered at Pentecost. And the two loaves represented the two components of the ecclesial multitude. So the Feast of Passover represented the means by which people could be saved. The Feast of First Fruits showed them as a group of people prepared for Yahweh, the first fruits unto God. Now the third feast, which we're going to look at this evening, is the climax of all this, because this now shows them in a third phase of their existence, rejoicing before Yahweh in the kingdom. And so, just to finish off this section on the Feast of First Fruits, in Revelation chapter 7, where we are told about this multitude being the 144,000, we point out that the same multitude, also styled the 144,000, are referred to again in Revelation 14, and they're called the first fruits. So it's not even circumstantial evidence, it's quite clearly stated that the multitude styled the 144,000 are the first fruits, and therefore the antitype of this second of the three major feasts. How are we going copying it down? Anybody want up there any longer? Yes, I wasn't aware of that figure, but that sounds as an interesting comparison. I was aware of the former figure, but not the latter one. There was 3,000 perished the first time.
The first time
perished,
3,000
perished. That's interesting, isn't it? Pardon? Pardon? How you going, Harold? All right, okay, we'll go on now to the third of these transparencies. And we're going to look now briefly at the Feast of Tabernacles, the third of these three feasts. Now we're told here that the Feast of Tabernacles was the last of the three great annual festivals at which every man of Israel was required to appear before Yahweh. We're told that in Deuteronomy chapter 16 and verse 16. Now this feast was also called the Feast of Ingathering, and that's an important factor in this particular consideration. Exodus chapter 23 and verse 16 so describes it. I'll go back to verse 14 because that brings them all together there. Exodus 23 verses 14 to 16. Three times thou shalt keep a feast unto me in the year. Thou shalt keep the feast of unleavened bread. Thou shalt eat unleavened bread 7 days, as I commanded thee in the time appointed of the month Abib, for in it thou camest out from Egypt, and none shall appear before me empty. That, of course, was associated with Passover. Verse 16, and the feast of harvest, the first fruits of thy labours, which thou hast sown in the field. So it was called the feast of harvest, the feast of first fruits, or sometimes the feast of weeks. In the New Testament, the feast of Pentecost. All of these are speaking of that same area. Now the third feast he styles, now the feast of ingathering, which is in the end of the year, when thou hast gathered in thy labours out of the field. And that is known as the Feast of Tabernacles. Tabernacles signified that they went out and they dwelt in booths. They lived in tabernacles, if you like. So that is what they did. But why did they go out and do that? Well, they went out to do that because they wanted to rejoice that it was now the end of the harvest. All the crops had been gathered in. So whilst first fruits ushered in the beginning of the harvest and the crop had been reaped and the first fruits were offered unto Yahweh, now when we come to this third feast, the work has been complete and the ingathering has been completed. Our note goes on to say that in all, 70 bullocks were offered. Numbers chapter 29 will tell you this. You'll have to do a little bit of calculation. If you look at Numbers chapter 29, I don't think you'll find the number 70 there. I don't recall seeing the number 79 actually written in just such a fashion as that. But if you look at Numbers chapter 29, you read in verse 12, and on the 15th day of the 7th month ye shall have an holy convocation. Ye shall do no servile work, and ye shall keep a feast unto Yahweh 7 days. And ye shall offer a burnt offering, a sacrifice made by fire of a sweet savour unto Yahweh, 13 young bullocks, 2 rams and 14 lambs of the first year. So they offered 13 bullocks on the 15th day, which was the first day of this feast. Now when you come down to verse 17, you find that on the second day they only offered 12, that was one less. Come down to verse 20, the third day of the feast they only offered 11. Verse 23, fourth day they offered 10. Verse 26, the fifth day they offered 9. Verse 29, the sixth day they offered 8. Verse 32, the seventh day they offered 7. And if you add all those up, it's 13 plus 12 plus 11 plus 10 plus 9 plus 8 plus 7. And I think that should make 70. And 70 is a number which symbolically represents all nations. I've got a note there that it was typical of the ingathering of all nations. In Genesis chapter 10, where you have the descendants of the sons of Noah, you find that there are 70 representative nations there. 70 is 7 times 10. 10 being the number of human government, 7 of course being completion. But 70 occurs several times in the Bible and is used representatively of all nations. So it was significant then that there were 70 bullocks which were offered as symbolical of the ingathering of all nations, which the Feast of Tabernacles is going to foreshadow. So the people came together in booths and they rejoiced because of the ingathering of their harvest. But what was the significance? It was a feast of rejoicing, and it points forward to the blessings to be experienced in the kingdom. We've referred to Leviticus chapter 23. We might like to look at that. That's the chapter which we read this evening. Leviticus chapter 23 and verses 33 to 44 constitute the section dealing with the Feast of Tabernacles. You can see the details of it there. But let's just come down to the latter part of it. Let's come down to verse 40. Leviticus 23 verse 40. And ye shall take you on the first day the boughs of goodly trees, branches of palm trees, and the boughs of thick trees, and willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before Yahweh your God 7 days. Now that particular verse you'll find over in Revelation chapter 7, that the compilers of the margin have quoted that verse as being a parallel reference to that vision in Revelation 7. So it seems obvious to most people reading it that it's an allusion back to this matter of the tabernacles, the multitude bearing the palms in their hands, you see. And you shall keep it a feast unto Yahweh 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. Ye shall celebrate it in the 7th month. Ye shall dwell in booths 7 days. All that are Israelites born shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel to dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I, Yahweh, your God. And so Moses declared unto the children of Israel the feasts of Yahweh. Now the anti-type of this is seen very clearly in that well-known passage in Zechariah 14. Because in Zechariah chapter 14, we've got a chapter which shows the destruction of the armies which come together against the city of Jerusalem. We've got the Mount of Olives cleaving in the midst thereof. We've got the law going forth from Zion. And then we've got all nations being commanded to come up to Jerusalem to significantly keep the Feast of Tabernacles. So in Zechariah chapter 14, verses 16 to 19, it shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the King, Yahweh of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. They won't be saved by the blood of the Passover lamb because they are the nations. They are not the first fruits unto God because they were not saved when the Lord Jesus Christ returned. But they are the result of the work of the establishment of the kingdom. They will be the ingathering out of the nations. Consequently, as symbolical of that, they will keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And it shall be that whoso will not come up of all the families of the earth unto Jerusalem to worship the King, Yahweh of hosts, even upon them shall be no rain. And if the family of Egypt go not up and come not that have no rain, there shall be the plague wherewith Yahweh will smite the heathen that come not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. This shall be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all nations that come not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And so it's repeated several times there that it is the Feast of Tabernacles that they are coming up to keep. The fact is that they will have every reason to rejoice. And if they don't come up and keep the Feast of Tabernacles, it will show that they are not rejoicing in Yahweh, but that they are people who are still self-interested and self-centered. And therefore Yahweh will punish them to cause them to look to Him. So it is the Feast of Tabernacles, which is the Feast of Rejoicing in the Kingdom Age. Well, we've looked, I think quite briefly actually, at the three major feasts. But we can see the three facets of God manifestation. The Passover shows the means of salvation. The Feast of First Fruits shows the beginning of the produce coming forward to Yahweh, the beginning of the results of the work of salvation which was instigated through the blood of the Lamb. And then finally the tabernacles, the completion of that work and the ingathering of all people into this multitude. Are we finished with that transparency now? Well, let's try to put these three together. There's lots of different things I could have put down here, but I just selected some of the more obvious things to represent these three groups as seen in Revelation 4 and 5, Revelation 7, the first 8 verses, and Revelation 7, verse 9 onwards. If you happen to have your Bible open in that general area of Revelation, you'll find that I've picked out certain key words. For example, in Revelation chapter 5 and at verse 9, the group who are there claim that they have been redeemed. And so that is the word which I've put up the top. They are the redeemed ones. They've been redeemed out of every nation. And just as Israel was saved out of Egypt, so the saints will have been redeemed out of the antitypical Egypt, but that will be out of all the nations of the earth. Coming down to the second group just for a moment, they are styled the sealed ones. They are taken out of Israel. So we read in Revelation chapter 7. And finally, the next group, Revelation chapter 7 verse 9, they are now clothed. And so we see the progression. Having been redeemed by blood, having been sealed by the word of God, they are finally clothed with immortality. And so those three feasts are represented by those three terms: redeemed, sealed, and clothed. Not only were they clothed, they were also washed. Clothed and washed, you'll find in Revelation 7, which we'll look at in more detail shortly. The redeemed were saved out of every nation. The sealed were taken out of Israel, and those who were clothed, we were told, came out of great tribulation. That is because the period of their sealing, which is the period of their probation, will naturally bring them into tribulation. And when they are finally clothed, they are saved, therefore, out of that period of tribulation, which was their period of probation. Now, there's another very interesting comparison which you might like to look at. The number of the redeemed